Welcome to Film Weekly's big night at the Oscars. Well, we're not there, but nearly. On the show, we'll be hearing from people who really were in amongst the action. Nominee Lucy Walker talks to us straight from the red carpet and right next to Halle Berry. Hadley Freeman prepares for the Vanity Fair party. And Kate Carter assesses the runway dresses on the biggest night for gowns in town. I'm Jason Solomons in the Film Weekly studio at Guardian headquarters in London. I'm not wearing anything very exciting, but I am joined by Zan Brooks. He's been live blogging all night. We're exhausted, but that won't stop us bringing you the highlights of the 83rd Academy Awards. Zan Brooks, you made it through then.
I made it through. I'm running on coffee and adrenaline and a little crystal meth.
As usual, of course, very LA of you. And now, Zan and I, before the evening began, we filled in our annual sweepstake. Zan, I found this year very hard to predict. Usually we get about sort of 17, 18 right out of the 24 categories, but I'm less confident this year.
Yeah, this year really felt like kind of pinning the tail on the donkey, that there was no obvious front runner. People were saying The King's Speech, but then other people were saying The Social Network is going to kind of steal its thunder. And then there was a third camp that was saying actually True Grit is the real dark horse
could
and that's going to
come on the
through.
Side. Yeah, it's very hard here in England to kind of work out what the feverish kind of response is, and we're not in the thick of it enough to know. Yes, we can follow all the Guild Awards and kind of work it out.
I wonder if there even is a thick of it. I wonder if there are people who actually do know. It's all playing out behind closed doors, and God knows how many times that the voting kind of shifted and swung in these closing weeks.
Yeah, and the spectre of crash kind of coming in and gate crashing Brokeback Mountain's party just a few years ago. It hangs heavy over any Oscar predictor. So let's hold on to the results for a moment, Zan, as we retrace Hollywood's big night.
Ladies and gentlemen, your hosts for the evening, James Franco and Anne Hathaway.
Oh my gosh, you're all real.
Wow.
This is actually happening. Okay. Hello, and welcome to the 83rd Annual Academy Awards.
Anne, I must say, you look so beautiful and so hip.
Oh, thank you, James.
Yeah.
You look very appealing to a younger demographic
thank
as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So here we are, and it's Hollywood's biggest night!
And it's...
And the Oscar hosts this year were James Franco, also nominated for 127 Hours himself, and Anne Hathaway. Zan, how did they do as Oscar hosts?
Well, do you know, I wasn't that impressed with them. I'm impressed with them as actors, but as hosts, I found myself really pining for the likes of Steve Martin or Jon Stewart or Billy Crystal, who kind of popped up very briefly.
Yeah, that was an odd bit. They had a little montage. They brought Billy Crystal on, and you thought, oh, he was good. And you could see the audience were kind of going, oh, yeah, we liked him. And then he threw to Bob Hope, who used to do it as well, and you thought, well, he was good.
Well, it's a very difficult gig, because I think you have to sort of strike the balance between being respectful and being irreverent. You need to kind of poke fun at these people, but you've also got to kind of keep it moving and be affectionate as well. And I felt that Franco and Hathaway are a bit too much like the kind of king and queen at the high school prom. They were a little bit too eager to please, and it just became a bit bland, I thought.
Yeah, there was a bit where Anne Hathaway, right at the beginning, said to him, you will appeal to the younger demographic, James. He said, you look beautiful. She said, well, you look like you'll appeal to the younger demographic. Did they?
Well, not to this young demographic.
I don't think you count as a young demographic, mate. I think you're
in the academy terms, I do.
Yes,
they're all in
do.
Retirement homes in Beverly Hills. I'm like a young pup to them.
I think that it's increasingly hard to make this an interesting show. I mean, I loved when Chris Rock did it, but he was rude. And then Ricky Gervais had obviously recently done it at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
And, of course, outraged people with his kind of acerbic wit. I myself did it at the Critics Circle recently, and it was accounted quite charming.
You got blackballed, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I've never work in this town again.
I keep thinking they should ask you, but if they didn't ask you, I keep thinking they should ask Jerry Seinfeld.
Well,
who came on and presented
and
an award a couple of years ago.
Between me and...
Well, this is it. They should go for Jerry Seinfeld. Maybe not Franco and Hathaway next year.
Not again. I mean, there was that little bit they did at the beginning. They did a kind of spoof. They kind of inserted themselves into a few Best Picture nominees, and it was just lame.
Yeah, and it went on and on and on.
What was the response that you were getting on your live blog as you were doing it? What were the viewers feeling it?
I think people were saying it was the most boring Oscars ever, and I think that might well be because of Franco and Hathaway. You know, it's a poison chalice, I guess, but you are there to keep it moving.
Yeah.
You are there to knit it all together.
Zan, were there any high points? Was it the musical interludes? I know you love to tap your toes.
The musical interludes, a little part of my soul dies each time one of those musical interludes comes on. Even though in and of themselves they're fine, they're technically great, these people can sing, even if it is, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow singing about a four-letter word for some. I never found out what the four-letter word was, but we did hear one four-letter word from Melissa Leo.
Brilliant. Well, I'm glad you brought her to that, because usually if a film's going to dominate, you get an early taster of it, don't you, with the technical awards given out near the beginning of the show. That didn't happen this year, but one of the first awards did go to Melissa Leo, as you mentioned, for Supporting Actress for The Fighter.
Mickey Ward is 31 years old. He's here because he needs the money.
Look at the size of that guy.
He's got 20 pounds on me, Dickie.
You don't fight, nobody gets paid.
This is my younger brother.
You gotta help me finish this.
Taught him everything he knows.
You don't want to see where this fight is?
She dropped an F-bomb, they keep calling it.
She did.
One of the first in Oscar history. The first, apparently, since 1965.
Who did it in 1965?
Oh, some very naughty person. I couldn't know who it was.
Julie Andrews, wasn't it?
Can you imagine? Well, it's pretty similar. In the Best Supporting Actor category, there was another win for The Fighter and a familiar accent coming on stage.
And the Oscar goes to... Christian Bale, The Fighter.
Bloody hell. Wow. What a room full of talented and inspirational people, and what the hell am I doing here in the midst of you? Julie, thank you so much for everything you do, and of course, mostly my wonderful wife. I didn't think I was like this. I thought I was... my wonderful wife, who's my mast through the storms of life. I hope I'm likewise to you, darling.
That is, of course, the Welshman, Christian Bale, who won for his role in The Fighter.
Channeling the spirit of Dick Van Dyke.
Yes. Well, apparently it's Dickie Eklund was the character who's based on him.
He had the wrong Dickie.
I think a great performance from Christian Bale as well. I mean, many people were surprised that Geoffrey Rush didn't win in that category because he was a King's Speech, a bit of a favourite. But I thought Christian Bale kind of wiped the floor with him. I think he deserved it entirely.
Yeah, again, it was, you know, The Fighter was a great showcase for all these big bells and whistles performances, apart, of course, from Mark Wahlberg, who was at the centre of it. Christian Bale basically playing the crack addict brother who coaches his sibling to the title. It's a big, forceful, larger-than-life performance of all the kind of tics and mannerisms. It's a great performance, I think. I think, you know, I kind of recoiled from Christian Bale's speech because he just seemed suddenly so phony.
Yeah.
It was so phony. And it's that weird thing of, like, what is an actor? And you kind of think, maybe Christian Bale can play everybody apart from Christian Bale.
The toughest part you'll ever play is yourself, Zan. You should know that by now. I mentioned the craft categories. We sometimes get an inkling of what's going to kind of then, if there's going to be a clean sweep. Cinematography came early this year in the awards, and there was a bit of a surprise there. It went to Wally Pfister for Inception. Now, you and I probably both thinking Roger Deakins was going to win his 8th nomination, I think it was, for this British cinematographer for the Coen brothers' True Grit, but Wally Pfister for Inception. Now, that was a bit of a shock, and it started a little bit of a slide towards Inception getting some technical awards. A deserved win for him or not?
Well, I think it probably was a deserved win because Inception did look great, but I found it sort of almost harrowing that Roger Deakins didn't get it, because I do think he's probably the best cinematographer in the business, and it's outrageous that he's never won before. And True Grit, I didn't think was one of the best Coen brothers movies, but I think it was one of the best looking Coen brothers movies. And that's all down to Roger Deakins.
Yeah, interestingly, there's a Western out this week in the cinemas called Rango, which stars Johnny Depp as a lizard. It's a cartoon. And Roger Deakins is employed as cinematographical consultant in that, on
wow.
a cartoon. And it looks brilliant.
Well, maybe he'll win for Rango next year.
Yeah, can you imagine? I think that the irony would be replete. Zan, let's just rewind a little, because the Oscars actually isn't just about the awards. There's a whole industry around what goes on just before on the red carpet outside. Phil Wheatley was prepared for the parade, and how. This is the part of the show where I become frock jock and I'm joined by Kate Carter, our online fashion editor, who cast her eye over who wore what. Kate, any trends?
Well, not really one big overall trend like there have been in the past. A few little micro-trends, as I believe the fashion magazines like to call them. Quite a lot of metallic sparkle.
So it's not actual metal, that people weren't actually wearing metal?
I don't think so. That would be a tad uncomfortable. And also, you know, if it rained, it could get
a bit rusty.
That's not a good look. No, kind of sparkly, sort of Gwyneth Paltrow had a sort of silver sheath type dress. So yeah, that was a little trend. Also cap sleeves, little sleeves. Because often in the past there's been the one shoulder look or totally strapless. That was a big thing a few years ago.
There was a bit of recycling going on as well, of course, because Colin Firth's wife was in a recycled dress.
Yes, she's a bit of an ethical fashion star. She wears, she's doing this thing called the Green Carpet Challenge, where she wears ethical fashion to every award that he's nominated for, which is all of them. And this one was made from 11 vintage dresses, so I suppose that is vintage, all from the period in which the King's Speech is set, which she and her team found in various stores and then put into one dress.
And Colin himself was also slightly eco as well, was he not?
Yes, he apparently was wearing an organic cotton suit by Tom Ford.
Well, it's Tom Ford who dressed, and of course whose film he was in last year, A Single Man, so he's carried through that designer. I mean, let's go through some of the kind of people that people will be seeing on their front pages. Helena Bonham Carter, I don't know, she was wearing dark sunglasses, dark hair, dark dress.
Yeah, she didn't look very happy, did she? She's always been, in the past, she's always been mocked for wearing really crazy outfits. There was one of the awards ceremonies earlier this year, she wore one red shoe and one green shoe. And I think, you know, got mocked rather a lot. And then for the BAFTAs, wore this kind of quite sensible for her black dress. And basically wore pretty much the same thing, but by a different designer, even the same bag.
I know you were particularly intrigued by Cate Blanchett, who's not nominated tonight, but she was there looking. I thought her hair looked great. Nice blonde kind of. I don't know, was a bob, it was a kind of sharp cut.
Yeah.
But what was she wearing?
She was wearing a Givenchy Couture dress, which probably cost more than, you know, the contents of this entire building and us sold into the white slave trade. And I mean, it's one of those choices that fashionistas are going to love, because it's very Cate Blanchett. She always goes for something a little bit different, a little bit fashion-y. And it was kind of beautiful, but I think it's probably one of those dresses that guys just go, huh?
Yeah, it had a crossy thing at the back.
Yeah, it had a sort of picture frame effect built into the front.
Yeah, like a locket.
Although subtler than that sounds. And then the back there was sort of cross straps with what looked like coral growing on them.
Yeah. But you liked it. You thought
I
it
liked it. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. She can kind of pull off anything, really. She's so elegant.
You know, you say men will kind of go, ugh. There is one that men will kind of go, oh, brilliant. But I know you were particularly down on it. But it's certainly probably going to make the front pages of kind of the red tops, because it was a red dress.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those. It's just a little bit obvious.
People like
I'm
obvious,
sound
don't
like
they?
My mother now, aren't I? yeah, I mean, men like obvious. It was if you picture Pamela Anderson in Baywatch in that red swimming costume and then turn it into a dress in your mind, that's what she was wearing.
What about? I mean, it's quite. I always think it's difficult. I remember Anna Paquin when she was nominated for the piano. She came wearing a woolly hat, and she was only nine or something like that. So you can't properly call. But we got another Best Actress nominee, Best Supporting Actress nominee, Hayley Steinfeld, nominated for True Grit. She's 14, I think. What does a 14-year-old wear to the Oscars? What did Hayley wear to the Oscars, and what should she wear?
Well, the interesting thing about her is she's got major fashion kudos in the last few months from all the endless awards she's been nominated for. She's worn Miu Miu and this incredible Prada dress, I think, and so she's been kind of causing a bit of a stir. But this one kind of looked like something you'd expect a 14-year-old to wear. But coming from her, that was quite surprising. A little bit little girly, pink, you know, tutu-ish.
Yeah, not right.
I don't
for the
like
Oscars.
To be mean about a 14-year-old, but she can do better.
You can, yeah. I mean, do people are people styled for these things, or do they make their own choices? There was one choice question for an interviewer from ABC was asking Reese Witherspoon. So, how long did it take you to decide to wear Armani Freeway?
Yes, hours of angsting over it. No, they mostly have stylists. Rachel Zoe, who's famous from kind of originally from Sex and the City.
She used to pick all the stuff for Sarah Jessica Parker in Sex and the City. Yeah,
yeah.
Even I know Rachel Zoe.
Yeah. She has been styling Anne Hathaway for some apparently extortionate amount of money, the result of which was Anne Hathaway looking exactly like Anne Hathaway always looks to ceremonies, you know, wearing a red dress. But yeah, so it's obviously it's almost like it's become a celebrity position in itself now.
Brilliant. Well, James Franco, and just before we go, we always sometimes forget about the men. We mentioned Colin Firth wearing Tom Ford. Any man looking particularly interesting? I noticed Robert Downey Jr. didn't seem to be wearing a tie.
No.
I would turn him away.
No, I know. What would his mother say? Well, I presume his mother's probably given up on him a long time ago. But the chap who really stood out was Christian Bale for the beard, which kind of... It looked like the kind of beard that you excuse by saying, oh, it's for a role. But apparently he's actually growing it because he's not working at the moment. So quite what anyone for this.
He has the beard of
it's
of,
a wizard.
It is a wizard. Yeah. It's a wizard's beard. Yeah. And he needs a pipe in there. Yeah. Those little kind of pipes. That's weird to be wearing to the Oscars. Your favourite dress of the night was?
Well, oddly enough, Annette Bening. I thought she looked very beautiful, sort of art deco, just really, really lovely.
Annette Bening does it for you.
Yeah.
Kate Carter, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Having ogled the red carpet from afar, Film Weekly plunged right into the thick of it. Lucy Walker was a big Brit hopeful on the night, nominated for Best Documentary for her film Wasteland, about Brazilian rubbish pickers. She also happens to be my old housemate, and fulfilling a promise made many years ago that if she was ever nominated for an Oscar and I was hosting a show on Oscar night, she would give me the inside view. And sure enough, the phone duly rang.
Grace.
Yes.
The Oscars, baby.
Have you... Congratulations, you're at the Oscars.
Thank you.
Have you just run the red carpet?
We just ran the red carpet, slowly, in high heels.
And did you speak to people? Did they take pictures of you? Did they scream at you?
They did, yes, they did. They did all of that. At one point, I was sandwiched in between Hilary Swank and Halle Berry. So I must say that they did seem to be shouting Hilary and Halle a bit more than they were shouting Lucy. But they were shouting Lucy.
I'm sure they were, darling. How was that for you? Because, I mean, you know, that is a sort of a dream, but also a nightmare.
To go from the largest landfill in the world to the largest red carpet in the world, it's a dream come true. And as a woman director, I'm the only female who's directed a feature film this year. And I am so happy to be me. I can't tell you. Thank goodness for me. I wish there were more women and girls up here, but I'm representing. What scoop can we give you? Everyone's looking lovely. And it's a chilly but sunny day here in Los Angeles, and it's just a dream come true. We're pinching ourselves, but then again, we don't really want to wake up.
Lucy, this is so exciting. Live from the red carpet, that is brilliant. Go and rub shoulders with some, like, kind of really... Are your shoulders out? I don't know what you're wearing today.
I'm wearing black sequins, and I was going to wear a garbage bag, but then somebody pointed out that my film was not about garbage. It was about the dignity of the human spirit, and I had better wear a frock. So
yes.
I did.
Representing for England, representing for my old house, 249
yes.
County Road. Congratulations.
Exactly.
Thoughts are with you. I shall be looking. My eyes are on Ro G when they mention the Oscars. Lucy, thanks so much for calling. Lots of love.
Thanks, Jace. You're the best.
Lucy Walker, nominated for Wasteland in the Best Documentary category. Zan, sadly, Lucy didn't win. I was shocked, actually, by how heart in mouth I was as her category was being read out. The award finally went to Charles Ferguson for Inside Job. Is that a fair enough award, Zan?
I think so. I haven't actually seen Lucy's film, so I don't know. But Inside Job is a great forensic study of the financial crash and the reasons behind it. And Charles Ferguson does a brilliant job of taking all this very dry material and making it basically play like an investigative thriller. It's an incredibly gripping film.
Yeah, there's a sort of conspiracy theory kind of heist drama going on.
Yeah, so I was pleased to see that. I mean, a part of me was kind of hoping that Exit Through the Gift Shop, the Banksy film, would win. So just in terms of what would happen, the kind of circus that would surround that.
Yeah.
Would Banksy show up? Of course he probably wouldn't, but then who would he send in his stead? And there are all these kind of weird rumours. Somebody was tweeting that actually there was some midget that Banksy was going to send, which sounds a bit Cirque du Soleil.
It is, especially if he'd kind of catapulted him from Ro G onto the stage.
That would have been good, yeah. Like it was swooping in on little wings.
Yeah, with doing graffiti as he went.
Yeah.
Missed a trick there.
So many tricks at this Oscars. I mean, there's a great Oscars that could have happened and somehow we didn't see it.
The alternative Oscars, we shall do it. I like Charles Ferguson's film very much, and he did actually sort of start his speech by sort of saying that none of these, you know, there was a great fraud that brought the world to its knees and no one has been arrested for it, which is scandalous. And it got a sort of
yeah, it was the one bit of politics that kind of crept in.
And those private investors in many of those films on Oscar night were probably somewhat on shaky ground, I should imagine. Meanwhile, Zan, there were prizes for Toy Story 3 in the Best Animation category. No surprise there. And technical awards started going to Inception for sound mixing and effects. In fact, it was an early front runner. It had four gongs very quickly. Was it an upset on the cards, do you think?
I don't think so. I think what tends to happen with films like that is that they dominate the first half of the evening. But their success is very much ring-fenced and quarantined. It's fine to give a big, good-looking blockbuster the kind of technical awards, but it would seem a little bit inappropriate if you started giving it what they call the big, classy awards. And you could make a case that Inception deserves those too, but I don't think it was ever likely.
There's one thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
Then next we come to one of our favourites on Film Weekly. It's the Foreign Film Award. Now, every year there's a few in this category that we've not seen, and yet we manage to sort of normally guess that one of the ones we haven't seen will win. Yeah. This year there was a favourite of mine. I thought it was going to be Beautiful, Iñárritu's film, which starred Javier Bardem, who'd also been nominated for Best Actor, which seemed to me that obviously it was going to be a favourite amongst the Academy. It's not a film I like in the slightest at all. And in the end, it didn't win. The prize went to Susanna Beer for Denmark's third win in the foreign film category for In a Better World. Is that a film you'd seen?
It's not a film that I've seen. Who knows? It might be great. I thought Beautiful was going to win as well, even though I didn't particularly like it. I'd have liked to have seen Outside the Law win, the Rushed Bashara film, which we saw in Cannes. Yes. I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, that's a kind of that was kind of a big blockbuster almost.
Yeah, it's a big blockbuster, but again, maybe a bit too kind of overtly political. Yeah.
Dogtooth, the Greek nomination, which
there
I thought
was
very
way
weird.
That Dogtooth was ever going to win. That would have scared the hell out of the Academy.
It's amazing that it was nominated. Mm. Indeed. Well, we look forward to seeing Susanna Beer and her film In a Better World. And then the night's two favourites got going with the handing out of the best screenplays, adapted to Aaron Sorkin for The Social Network and original for The King's Speech, which went to expat Brit David Seidler.
My husband is, he's required to speak publicly.
I have received...
Perhaps he should change jobs.
He can't.
I don't care what woman you carry on with at night, as long as you show up for duty in the morning.
Wallace is not just some woman I'm carrying on with. We intend to marry.
Excuse me?
She's filing a petition for divorce.
Good God.
And the Oscar goes to... King's Speech, David Seidler.
My father always said to me, I would be a late bloomer.
Actually, on the night, there were quite a lot of surprising English voices popping up. There were animators that were suddenly unveiling themselves as Brits. There was Atticus Ross, who is a kind of ambient techno DJ I didn't know about. He'd gone to work with Trent Reznor and he won the score for The Social Network as well. It was always very kind of nice when you thought, oh, I didn't know about them. And I think we're in the press, we kind of try and follow some Brits, but then we don't realise that how many of them are actually out there working in various elements of the film industry.
Yeah, I mean, we always concentrate on the tip of the iceberg. Isn't it? It's all been about Colin Firth this Oscar season, but there were a lot of others who clearly were doing very, very well, but completely off the radar. I was glad to see David Seidler win. I think, I just think he is obviously a very kind of gracious, intelligent man. He gave a great speech at the BAFTAs. He gave another great speech here. He's the oldest winner, as he pointed out, of the Best Original Screenplay. He's 74.
Still to come, we reveal the big winners in acting and the best film. Before that, let's pan out and take a sweeping helicopter shot of the whole event. After the awards and during, people are readying themselves for the parties. Indeed, preparations for them have been feverish for the entire week. And that's just getting your hands on an invitation. The Guardian's Hadley Freeman has been there undergoing a week of events, schmoozing and flesh-pressing. She's been staying in the Four Seasons and, as I called, she was getting ready for the Vanity Fair party. She's like embedded in Celebrity Central. Hadley, you've been in Los Angeles for most of the week. Is it a real pressure cooker atmosphere in the terms of the excitement what they have for the Oscars?
There's definitely an extraordinary atmosphere here. I would call it more of an atmosphere of Madame Tussauds than pressure cooker, but that is perhaps because I'm not nominated. I mean, you cannot move in this town without bumping into a celebrity, and I realize that's a phrase that's generally used, not literally. I am using that absolutely literally. It's like a trade fair of people you see in Grazia magazine, is the only way. I've bumped into Colin Firth about 5 times at this point, and again, I mean that literally, in that I seem to repeatedly step out of a lift and walk right into him. I think Helena Bonham Carter is stalking me. Joan Rivers is my favorite celebrity spot, and then there's obviously the glamorous likes of Donald Trump and the Kardashian family who have to come to every single party.
Now, Hadley, you're going to the Vanity Fair party.
I am.
This is not me granting you a wish like a fairy godmother, but it's quite exciting. Is it difficult to get into the Vanity Fair party? Is it still the party that it was?
Well, it is incredibly difficult to get into the Vanity Fair party. I'm proud to tell listeners of Film Weekly that I've incurred the wrath of all British celebrity journalists out here, from the likes of such rags as the Daily Mail and News of the World and all the rest of it, because they haven't been able to go to the Vanity Fair party. I seem to be the only British journalist. So it is a big thing, although now various, you know, inevitable Hollywood insider type people tell me that it is not such a big deal. It's no longer the big deal it was. Now the one everybody wants to go to is thrown by Madonna's manager at Madonna's house and blah, blah, blah. I think these are just words of the bitter who are jealous that they didn't get invited.
Yeah, I mean, it will be very exciting. How does an invite come in, like a Willy Wonka kind of chocolate bar? How does it arrive?
Exactly. It comes in a padded envelope, and it arrived, and I was told it had come, so I went downstairs to get it, and the hotel concierge told me that I wouldn't be able to get it for several hours, because when they saw it was from Vanity Fair, they had immediately locked it in the hotel safe, and the person who had the key wouldn't be back for several hours. So it's amazing being out here. I imagine this is what it would be like if OK Magazine had a big sort of three-day event, and everybody of an OK Magazine mindset was all in the same city.
Yeah.
Everyone's excited by the same ridiculous thing.
It's something you do withering very well, but are you actually quite excited by the whole thing?
Well, I don't want to ruin my withering reputation. It is exciting. It's really funny to be here. It's fun to be anywhere where you know everybody is watching, to be honest. You know, you feel like you're in the middle of everything. It's how I bet Britain will feel, but perhaps less fun, during the royal wedding, in that you really know you're in the centre of it.
Hadley, lovely to talk to you. Enjoy the Vanity Fair party.
Thank you. Thanks, Jason.
Let's swoop back inside, and as we get ready to reveal the big winners here on Film Weekly's Oscar Night special, I just cast a look over the audience and can see that the Kodak Theatre is stuffed with Hollywood's finest talent. Over the last year, Film Weekly has brought you face-to-face with many of them. Here's a little selection of our Oscar nominee chums. Can you guess who they are? There's a rogue in there who's not nominated, but it's a protest from Film Weekly because we think he should have been. Listen up, people. This is a competition. You can actually win stuff. So listen carefully. Name our gallery of guests.
I'm very pro podcast.
You're pro podcast?
Yes, very pro podcast.
Oh, good. This is the podcast to be pro.
what is the name of it?
This is Film Weekly from The Guardian.
Very cool. Okay, and The Guardian, no doubt. Wow, very good, very good.
I have a feeling that both you and your character in The Kids Are All Right would approve of The Guardian.
Highly.
I believe that, you know, flaws are what make us special and unique, you know, and they're hard to accept in yourself, but they're also hard to accept because, you know, we're always trying to strive this to this level of perfection that movies create.
Do you miss Joel? I miss you. I'm not saying this is not going well. This is lovely, but where is Joel?
Yeah, we're managing to have fun without him. He's doing this in Paris at this very moment because, oh my God, you don't want to know about our schedule. It's ridiculous and pointless. And
you cover more than, you should win more Oscars than anyone else because you can cover more bases than Fincher. He can only just be in one place.
I didn't really know how we were going to cast Lily, Natalie Portman's foil in the film. I originally thought I was going to get someone who looked a lot like Natalie. I got a call from Natalie saying, how about my friend Mila Kunis?
I've always said that I'm not very L.A., but the one major thing L.A. about me is my coffee order. It's really L.A.
What is that?
It's an awful order from Starbucks that couldn't be any more obnoxious.
I was actually in London and Mila was in L.A., so we met over iChat. And I hired her off of iChat, which might be a first.
Tell me.
Okay, it's a venti iced vanilla latte sugar free with soy without the pumps. It's a horrible order.
So just go onto our Facebook page, Film Weekly Fans, and list each and every one of the people in that montage. You can win a DVD of the Oscar-nominated and very fine indeed indie flick, Winter's Bone. Zan, it's time to turn to the big acting categories now, and we'll start with the Best Actress.
And the Oscar goes to... Natalie Portman, Black Swan.
This is the first Academy Award and second nomination for Natalie Portman.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to the Academy. This is insane. I want to thank my parents, who are right there, first and foremost, for giving me my life and for giving me the opportunity to work. And my beautiful love, Benjamin Millepied, who choreographed the film and has now given me my most important role of my life.
Natalie Portman winning for Black Swan. Is that deserved? Were you gladdened by this?
I think it was always on the cards that she was going to win. She was the heavy favourite going in. I thought it was a good performance. I liked Black Swan a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
And, you know, so I was perfectly happy to see her win.
There's a sense that you're waiting for Natalie Portman to be good. I've always thought, oh, she's great. Obviously, in Leon, when she was 11, she referred to that in her speech.
She did, yeah.
And she had a sense that she's actually never quite really matched it.
Not really. And she was in that terrible film that was out last week that luckily didn't scupper her chances.
They obviously hadn't seen enough of No Strings Attached. I should just remind her of that. Her and Ashton Kutcher together. Don't go and see that. Prefer her in Black Swan. And she was very gracious on stage too. She can't ballet around now because she's 6 months pregnant. And we wish her the best of luck with that.
And the Oscar
the best
goes
actor
to
was next, and that went to
Colin Firth, The King's Speech.
I have a feeling my career's just peaked. My deepest thanks to the Academy. I'm afraid I have to warn you that I'm experiencing stirrings, somewhere in the upper abdominals, which are threatening to form themselves into dance moves, which, joyous as they may be for me, it would be extremely problematic if they make it to my legs before I get off stage. So I'm going to do my best to be brief with my gratitude first for being on this extraordinary list of fellow nominees.
The hottest odds-on favourite in Oscar history, Colin Firth, Lord Colin Firth, King Colin Firth. Deserved?
Well, I guess that depends whether you love The King's Speech as much as most people seem to. I don't love it as much as most people.
Neither do I.
I think he probably should have won last year for A Single Man. I thought he was better in that. I still thought it was a good performance.
Yeah.
And I always like to see Colin Firth win because he looks so ill at ease with it all, doesn't he?
It's strange, isn't it? It's a film about a person who struggles to make speeches. Mm. But of course, Colin Firth has been making brilliant acceptance speeches for the last
brilliant
six
acceptance
months.
Speeches, he has. But he's still got that slightly kind of, slightly peevish, embarrassed kind of quality, which he's sort of, over the course of this award season, he's turned into a kind of comedic shtick. He's the sort of the slightly bumbling Englishman who comes up and says, oh, I might start dancing now. And just the idea of him dancing is in itself hilarious.
Well done, Colin Firth. Congratulations to you. I suppose next came the big surprise of the night. In the Best Director category, the award went to
Tom Hooper, The King's Speech.
Wow. Thank you to my parents, my mum and dad, who are in the audience tonight. And I know there's been a lot of thanking of mums, but this is slightly different because my mum in 2007 was invited to a fringe theatre play reading of an unproduced, unrehearsed play called The King's Speech. Now, she's never been invited to a play reading in her entire life before. She almost didn't go because it didn't sound exactly promising, but thank God she did because she came home, rang me up and said, Tom, I think I found your next film.
Tom Hooper winning for The King's Speech. Now, my money was certainly on David Fincher.
Mine too.
So this, I think we could technically say was a big surprise. What surprised me was that BAFTA, who awarded The King's Speech 7 gongs all told for every single category going, didn't give it to director.
It's really odd, isn't it? I guess, though, that the clue was the lesser-known award, the Directors Guild Award, which went to Tom Hooper. And almost always the person who wins the Directors Guild Award goes on to win the Best Director Oscar, and Hooper did win that. I don't know why. I think that The King's Speech is a very well-carpentered, very well-put-together film, but I think that Fincher is a master director, and I think The Social Network was, you know, maybe his masterpiece.
I mean, he's up there against Aronofsky, against David O. Russell for The Fighter. Okay, yes, so he's a bit maverick.
No, he's great
Fincher,
too.
Joel and Ethan Coen. I mean, seasoned masters of the form. Tom Hooper, really. It's only his second big feature film. Really.
Yeah, he's sort of come out of nowhere, hasn't he? And to beat those kind of titans is quite something. And I'm not quite sure what it is. I say it's something. I don't know quite why or how he's done it.
Zan, that gave us a sort of bit of a pointer, because up to here, I couldn't quite tell where the big one was going. When the moment came, it was up to Steven Spielberg to dish out the top prize of Best Film.
And the Oscar goes to... The King's Speech, Ian Canning, Emile Sherman, and Gareth Unwin, producers.
Wow, what an incredible, incredible honour. What an amazing year for film. To be with those other films in that category is just absolutely incredible.
To have been part of a film that's touched and moved people so much all around the world has been just a huge privilege.
Indeed, it went to The King's Speech. That did for me, because I'd gone for The Social Network. I thought it was going to kind of be a younger film that the Academy would go for. And in the end, it was the older film about communication rather than the more modern one.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision. And I think that probably it was always going to come down to those two films. And my heart said The Social Network, but I think my head said The King's Speech. I would have liked to have seen The Social Network win. I think it's a more significant film. I think it will last more. I've seen it twice. It's better on the second viewing.
Yes.
I think it may well be a masterpiece.
I'm slightly disappointed by the sort of final result. But it does bring us to our sweepstakes, Zan. Will you reveal, please, out of the 24 categories, how many you have got right?
Well, weirdly, I've done pretty well, but there is no reason for that. It is pinning the tail on the donkey. It's drinking my coffee and taking my crystal meth like they do in Winter's Bone, and then just randomly ticking various boxes. And the odd thing is that I got things like documentary short and best live action short and best animated short.
Right, and you haven't
and
seen
any. And I haven't seen any of these, but I somehow got them.
So like the mad chimp. You come
the
up
mad
with
chimp
genius.
With a typewriter.
Yeah.
And I got 19 out of 24.
19 out of 24. That's better than normal.
I know.
That's
it shows idiocy pays.
You've trumped me. I mean, I only got 14 out of 24.
You see, and intelligence fails.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no point of seeing
that's
any of
the
these
moral
things.
Of this year's Oscars.
Zan, I salute you. Congratulations on your 19 out of 24. That's a very, very good strike rate indeed. You should be very proud of yourself while you were live blogging. For Zan's live blog, go to guardian.co.uk. But that does bring us to a close for Film Weekly's Oscar Night special. So to round up, The King's Speech walked away with 4 awards, including Best Picture, Actor and Director. Inception was a bit of a surprise package, a surprise equal, winning 4 gongs in technical categories. The Social Network went away with 3 awards for screenplay, editing and score, while The Fighter won 2 awards for supporting actor and actress. And good old Toy Story 3 also got 2 for animated film and for Randy Newman's song We Belong Together. It's a jolly note on which to finish. So thanks and good morning from me, Jason Solomons, my producer on this Film Weekly special, Lucy Greenwell, from Zan Brooks, and all together now,